This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. It is a great company and very affordable for your website or blog. Click on the link on our website, the Bluehost link, that is, for more information or to sign up. And by the Amazon store, click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
Judge.
I don't like apples.
Who doesn't like apples?
It's a family thing.
Well, don't worry. They're not for eating. It's for a kind of game. A really fun game. I call it target practice.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, in which we're going to talk about episode 3 of season 3 of the series, Quite a Common Fairy, in which we learn that for some reason Henry and his family are Microsoft Windows people. They don't seem to like apples. Well, oh well. Hey, we're going to talk about this episode with four ladies here on the panel: Deborah, Lisa, Inge, and Shelley. And before we dive into our analysis of this third episode, we first want to listen to some feedback on our previous episode because, well, you know, we've actually got some people listening and disagreeing, which is always awesome because it means that people are paying attention. So let's listen to the feedback on our little discussion last week.
Hi, this is Nan. Okay, I disagree with y'all completely about this episode. I thought it was integral to the story, and both the fairy tale version and Emma's versions go together because it's all about self-identity and how do we identify ourselves. It's with the people that we put in our lives about who we listen to, who we surround ourselves with. In the fairy tale version, Snow White is surrounded by people who love her, Prince Charming and the dwarves. So she comes to identify herself as the best version of herself, as a leader, as someone who's loved. Emma, in this episode, is allowing Peter Pan, who does not have her best interests at heart, give her her identity as an orphan, which in reality is true. She is an orphan, but that is not the best version of herself. So she should be listening to her mother and her father who love her, but she's allowing these negative voices to tell her who she is. And that could be her downfall if she doesn't come to find the best version of herself. So and what is it telling us? Do we surround ourselves with people who love us or the Lord who loves us? Or are we letting the culture tell us who we are? Deborah said that she thought maybe for a minute Emma was Wendy. Well, she's not Wendy, but Peter Pan wants her to be the mother of the lost boy. So he's helping her to identify with that lost girl aspect of her so that she will want to stay with them. Plus, I just want to let you know that I work with Angela Ciolana, and we love her. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that feedback. Keep it coming. We love it when our listeners push back because, you know, what do we know? we're just talking about the show. We have our theories and our thoughts and our opinions, but so have you, and it's always great to hear from you. So let's waste no more time and start with our analysis of this episode. As usual, first round, first reactions. Let's give this a rating first. Inge, what would be your rating? One from one. How does that work in the U.S.? You have like A, B, C, D, right?
Yeah.
Would this be an A, a B, a C, or a D?
Oh boy, I think it's a B.
All right.
Not great, but also not very bad.
What about you, Shelley?
I liked last week better, but, and I'm sorry I wasn't there last week for you, but on this one, it moved the story forward, but it had areas that I felt it stumbled with. So I've got to go with a B.
All right. Any more Bs? What about you, Deborah?
Yeah, I actually was thinking B too. And I actually would have rated last week C. And I just got to say, when she said my name, I was like, what?
What did I?
What did I say? Am I in trouble? Okay. But yeah, the thing that I think I loved about this episode more than last week is Tinkerbell has always been one of my favorite Disney characters, along with Jiminy Cricket. And I think I must like green things because I like Kermit the Frog too. And yes, he is Disney now.
Kermit the Frog and Tinkerbell in the same phrase. I never thought we'd see the day.
Was there a Kermit reference that I missed?
No, but he's green, so it's not easy being green, apparently. Anyway, moving right along.
Well, that's true. It's not easy to be
moving
green.
Moving right along.
Lisa, what's your? How do you grade this episode?
I'll give it a B. I like the way they developed Tinkerbell, so I wasn't prepared to like her. And I did, and I kind of wish Regina had been a little more evil with her. I was waiting for something worse. So
all right, well I'm going for a B+ because there was pixie dust in this one. Actually, I was really enjoying the addition of Tinkerbell to the story, and I hope we're going to see a lot more of her because I think the actress who played her did a really good job. And it you know, in a way, it kind of brought back that kind of, even though the story is getting pretty dark. But it also added a little bit more, you know, of that magic of the style of the first season, which I really like. And I missed that sorely in last week's episode. Let's go over the first events. David is playing the heroic Prince Charming, who really doesn't want to acknowledge that he's dying, and instead he is asking Snow White if she doesn't want to take a break. And Snow White is like, no, let's move on. You really should take a break. But she immediately knows that he needs a break. And then they are in trouble because apparently the maps in Once Upon a Time function quite similar to the magical maps in the Harry Potter world. In a sense that the targets is moving. And so if the camp is moving, then so does the map. And so now they don't know how to find Henry. Then we switch to Henry, who is confronted with... Steve Jobs products and doesn't like apples. And
I thought that was a great line.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And it was one of those red apples that we've seen in the first season as well. I always wonder, in a jungle like that where it's constantly dark, where do you find red apples like that? A coconut might have been a little bit more appropriate, but apparently there are apples there too.
It's hard to shoot a coconut of someone's head, so.
Yes.
But it's Neverland. You can make believe anything you want.
Apparently. Oh, that's true. Yeah. So Peter Pan must know apples from the UK, I suppose.
Well, we don't know where Pan is from.
And then we get some CGI magic when we see Rumpelstiltskin's house, and it's worse than ever. I mean, normally I would say television should be improving, but here it's just getting worse and worse. That castle looked like a video game from the 80s. It was like at any time I was expecting Mario to jump into the screen and say, "Ooh."
I totally thought the same thing. Thank you, Father. I was like, "What is that?"
It was just horrific. And the same thing is happening with that spin-off show, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. It is not good. It looks so bad, and then people are defending this by saying, well, you know, that's television and low budget, but I've seen quite a few other series where the computer graphics are excellent, so I think they're dropping the ball on this. And since this show really depends on those, you know, magical moments, it just takes you out of the story. I think it's not good. I don't know who's making these things.
I'm less disturbed by the fact that the wide shot of them with the castle looks pixelated or not very real. It looks CGI. Because for me, it's all about the story and the actors and actually the costuming, too. If the costuming was poor quality, then I would be disappointed. So we're looking at it from two different perspectives there.
I know. It should be all about the story, but it is so bad right now that it's really taking me out of the story. And it feels as if they don't care. That's kind of what it, I don't know. It's like, come on. It is just so, you can so tell that they're walking around on a green screen and nothing is there. And it just hurts my eyes. It's not fun anymore. But anyway, I'm just perhaps I'm just grumpy today. I should join the dwarves.
So we'll just call you Leroy?
Yes. awful CGI. Anyway, well, we're not here to discuss the CGI. So they're in Rumble's house. This time I could pause the screen on the cupboard, which I tried to do last week. And that's also probably why I only got to half of this show, because I was writing down everything I saw in the cupboard, hoping for some you know, intriguing clues. After all, this is called The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and I was just sorely disappointed that there's nothing of value in that whole cupboard. So that took me 5 minutes for nothing. So on the left, I'm just going to tell people what I saw just to, you know, make, just to be complete. There is a treasure chest. There is a huge book that looks like some kind of liturgical missal that we use in the Catholic Church. There is a flask and some other stuff that I couldn't identify, but it seems to me that it's kind of the material that Rumpel uses to brew his magical potions. In the right part of the cupboard, you see a statuette. I couldn't really tell. It looks like an animal or a dragon or something. There's a small crystal ball in a tin can. And a metal container. There's also a little bit lower, a circular container, like the ones we saw the Mad Hatter use for his hats. Only this one is brown and it's very small, so I don't know what's in there. And also, there is still this big, big octagonal, it looks like a giant dice or something like that, with the runes on it. And it really stands out. And I keep telling myself there has to be a reason that they feature this object. It's not just set dressing. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that's related
to something. That object looks like something from Middle Earth to me with the runes.
The
on
runes
it.
Definitely that's... do, yes. And some paper scrolls, and well, that's about it. And then the company of Robin Hood enters the room with Little John, aka Hagrid. Looks just like Hagrid. And we discover that Robin Hood and Marian had a son who is called Roland. Of course, Roland, a very important name, especially from, let's say, the early Middle Ages in France.
Yep.
So it's just one of those characters. He was a Frankish military leader under Charlemagne, and he's been part of so many myths and stories, and later even fairy tales. So he, of course, the most famous story about him is this, the Chanson de Roland, 11th century, which we all had to more or less work our way through in high school. So Roland, there is no Roland in the original Robin Hood stories, as far as I could Google, but here there is.
And in the United States, we do not study the Song of Roland.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one that I don't expect a lot of Americans to be very familiar with.
That's why I told you.
I did happen to notice that the oldest extant copy of the Song of Roland, which is at the Oxford Library, mm-hmm. dates to about the same time as the Robin Hood legends began emerging.
Right, yeah, that's
so
like 11th
That's kind
century.
Of a stretch, but there was that small connection there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see if they take this somewhere, or whether it's just, you know, they needed a name and they thought Roland. Oh, you know, well, that sounds old.
Yeah, it means famous land, so I don't know if that has something to do with his function.
I don't know.
Another thing that struck me was like, so Lady Marian was pregnant with Roland when we saw her last, you know,
yes.
in last season. And now he's 4. So Belle was with him for 3 years then? I mean, because if you do a little bit of math.
Or perhaps they just grow up very fast.
Yeah, but there's also 28 years of pause between it, so he also has been frozen in time like that. So I try to piece together the chronology of the story.
Yeah, perhaps he had pixie dust for breakfast a lot. No, I don't know. It's just one of those things that I just keep hoping that someone will make a timeline for all these flashbacks, because it's getting so confusing and always like, oh wait, huh? That guy is alive? What? Where does he come from? And so, because they don't necessarily always tell you exactly where you are in the timeline, they just want to make a point or highlight like a little thing that is relevant to this particular episode. But it can get a little bit confusing. And that is if you care for the details.
I thought it was really interesting, Neil's conversation with Mulan and Robin Hood, that he knew immediately that Henry was trapped there. And then he actually recognized that Henry was the boy Pan had been looking for. Because he said, he called him the truest believer. And he is the only reason Emma would ever be in Neverland. And then I keep wondering where the ruby slipper's going to come up.
Yeah, wasn't that a fun reference?
The magic mirrors, the ruby slippers, beans. I don't know if he said another one. Those are all things.
Ashes.
Ashes. You know, different portals, different things they've used as portals.
I think the problem with the ruby slippers is that there is a trademark thing or a copyright thing. So Disney does not own that, so they can't really show it because it's something they came up with for the movie of the Wizard of Oz.
It was a nice way to acknowledge it. That was cute.
Oh yeah, I mean,
can I interject something?
Yes, definitely.
About that. Technically, you're right. Disney does not own Wizard of Oz, but for the longest time, MGM mm-hmm. was in partnership with Disney because it used to be Disney MGM Studios, not Disney Hollywood Studios. So, you know, it was kind of a nice, friendly relationship between those two companies.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But just so you know.
But wasn't Oz the Great and the Powerful released last year? Wasn't that by Disney?
Right. That was by Disney.
But they couldn't use the ruby slippers because of
Disney had owned the ruby slippers as part of a artifact as part of their museum for a while.
Yeah. But they just didn't have the rights to it to show it in a movie, I guess. Oh, well, before we dive into the secrets of the Wizard of Oz, Deborah, since you're already talking, Tinkerbell, you told us that is one of your favorite characters. So what did you think of this incarnation of Tinkerbell?
Well, I liked it because I'll be honest, even though I like Tinkerbell as a character and Peter Pan and, you know, she's kind of immature and... Not a lot of fun in a sense, her character wise in the animated classic. But in this, I'm like, why did she steal when nobody asked her to steal? What the heck is she doing? You know, nobody asked her to save, you know, Regina.
I felt that she was just very sweet. She wanted to help, and she couldn't understand why the blue fairy didn't allow her to do that.
Kind of naive, you know, just excited and naive, and wants to help, and that's the fairy way. And
who did we have in the other season with Dreamy? What was the fairy's name there? Nova. It was very similar to that. They're very trusting and loving and helpful, and but that's not our way, but. We're going to do it anyway. The Tinkerbell Blue Regina interaction, that was the most disappointing part of the story. I thought it was a little contrived that was it. I mean, there might be more to it later down the road that will redeem it for me, but having Blue tell her, you know, she's not redeemable, she's embraced by the darkness, she's surrounded by darkness, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's the part for me that kept it from being a B+ or an A-. It felt flat.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they had to do it to kind of introduce this theme of Tinkerbell still believing in Regina. And then that belief actually gets her into trouble because Regina doesn't respond to it. I mean, she is lying to Tinkerbell, doesn't believe in herself, doesn't believe in the power of magic, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess
isn't
it's
that,
just
isn't that
again,
a direct result of the conversation she has over dinner with Rumpel, so that with the rose goose.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah,
Swan. Yeah, which was the best line ever.
Rumpel is definitely robbing her from her faith and her her confidence. And I've got a sound clip here that Inga prepared. Let's listen to it.
You think you are the diner at the feast, tasting the offerings, a little love, a little darkness. What you don't realize is, you are the feast, and the darkness has tasted. You!
Oh, you're vile. Leave my home.
The darkness likes how you taste, dearie. It doesn't mind the bitter. And now that it's started the meal, it's gonna finish it.
You can no more fly from your fate than can that swamp.
See you tomorrow. Don't be late. Oh, and bring that simmering rage. It's all you have.
This scene is why I gave this episode a B+. It's awesome. It feels like the first season. This is great. We need more of those scenes. I love the snappy comments of Rumpel and just, you know, just take that simmering rage.
Father, you said you haven't seen the ending, but I have to tie this in with the line that Regina gives back to Tink at the end because they fit like two puzzle pieces. When excellent. Tinkerbell has Regina's heart. Regina has pulled out her heart and given it to Tinkerbell to destroy her. And Tinkerbell asks her, why did you lie? Why didn't you go through that door and meet your soulmate? Would being happy be such a terrible fate? And there might be a clip, I don't know. And Regina says, yes. If I let go of the anger, what would I be without it? I would be happy, but I would be weak. And that is a direct tie into what Rumpel felt. Rumpel always made that selfish choice. He could never give up the addiction of magic. He'd never give up being strong for the fear of becoming a weak and a coward again.
Yes, it is. You can definitely see the beginnings of Regina's like final conversion to the dark side, and and it's clear that she acknowledges that she's losing her freedom. You know, she's saying, I want to be free. Well, if you deal with the devil, or in this case, Rumpelstiltskin, that is what you lose. You lose your freedom. You might gain power, but you lose freedom. And freedom is the fundamental support for love. Without freedom, you cannot love. So she's just held captive by her own desire for power, probably.
Yeah, and also Rumpel is kind of manipulating her by suggesting that there's no free will. She cannot choose another fate. Fate has determined that she will be consumed by darkness and there is nothing she can do about it. And the question is that true?
Well, and that is why
he's still manipulating her to fulfill his own quest of trying to find that land. He can see the future, at least see the pieces and know he's thinking he's putting them together.
Well, and that is why the character of Tinkerbell is so interesting in this context, because what does she do when Regina falls down? She literally gives her a second chance. So Tinkerbell kind of reopens the future for her and gives her another chance to make the right choice, which I think it's like the opposite of what Rumpel does. Rumpel is all about fate and determination. Tinkerbell is all about second chances and, you know, try to find happiness and don't give up, which Regina does. And it's something that the Blue Fairy seems to predict. It's like this woman is beyond redemption, which, of course, we know is not true because we've seen Regina change. So shame on the Blue Fairy to be so pessimistic. We do get that whole theme of you know, I'm a fairy, so perhaps you should just believe me. So it's all about trust. You know, faith is a different word for trust. And so ultimately, what Regina lacks is trust, is being able to trust the right people. And instead, she's looking for power to dominate instead of letting go. We then quickly switch back to Henry. I mean, it's good to see him a little bit more in this episode. Last time, and we just got a glimpse of him. Or not even, it was Peter Pan. But he's back. And we get an interesting reference. Apple is back, and now this time they want to play a game. He has to shoot the apple from the head of someone. This, of course, is a direct reference to another very famous story, the story of William Tell, which is originally a Swiss story. This legend stems from the 15th century. The gist of the story is that William Tell is kind of is defying like some king or what was it, like some leader who wants everybody to bow for his hat that he has hung on top of a pole in the central square. And William Tell is like, I'm not going to bow for that. So he refuses, gets arrested. And then the whatever it is, the king or the chief is like, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna kill you unless you do what I say. And that is, well, here's your son. So you get an interesting parallel here between William Tell and his son, and well, earlier in this episode of Once Upon a Time, what's his name? Robin Hood and his son. So William Tell can redeem himself and his son by shooting an apple of the head of his son in a single attempt. And then Tell is such a good, so good with bow and arrow that he splits the apple with a bolt from his crossbow. And then there is also in the story that William Tell actually has two arrows, I think. And then before releasing William Tell, this evil guy who is called Gessler, he asks William Tell, well, why did you have the second arrow? And Tell is like, well, you know, if I would have shot my son, the second arrow would be for you. So there is a lot of that in this sequence, of course, where poor Henry has to shoot the apple off the head of this one of the lost boys, and then decides to try to shoot Peter Pan, who catches the arrow in mid-flight and seems to enjoy it. So I don't know. It was an interesting moment. I was a bit surprised that he tried to kill.
Wasn't that a great moment? Henry is fighting because, yeah, you know, Tinkerbell is saying, oh, well, he's probably been with him too long, meaning, you know, he'll, you know, get sucked into it and become a lost boy. But no, I mean, he's Pan is doing his best to say you're one of us.
But what if Henry wants
to be the hero?
What if he had succeeded? He would have killed Peter Pan. That would have been
way too easy.
Yeah,
I know, but I mean, he was fully intent on killing Peter Pan. That is kind of out of character.
From Pan to see what Henry would do and what's he made of. And I think that if Henry had refused to shoot or had tried to shoot the apple off the guy's head, I think Pan would have been disappointed. I think Pan really, like, that's what he wanted to see, that Henry has that passion and conviction to fight. I think he liked that.
Okay, obligatory Star Wars reference here. So you can fast forward for 20 seconds if you don't like this kind of stuff. But it almost feels like, you know, Darth Vader tempting Luke Skywalker to attack him. And then later on, the Emperor, same thing, is like, yeah, you go ahead, let your anger flow. And then he knows that he can reel him in. Okay, and you can listen now again safely without any further Star Wars references.
And Father, what you don't know is later in the episode that you haven't seen, Pan actually tells Henry, you remind me of your father.
Yeah.
Interesting. There might be a Star Wars season in the future of Once Upon a Time if they're really desperate. That's going to be right after the zombie season.
Please no Ewoks.
But, you know, another thing is, you know, Henry says, my mother is the savior. And Pan says, what was it, something about, is she this, like, calling Henry the savior instead, and how she was only the savior because she had Henry. So there's another Star Wars reference. See?
Yep. What if breaking the curse wasn't what made her the savior, but having you was? Because, and again, we're going into spoiler territory for your father, but he points out the fact that Henry is descended from the greatest of light and the greatest of dark.
Interesting.
And Henry says, so I'm supposed to save magic? He says, you're the hero magic has been waiting for. And that's when Henry says, I don't believe you. And he says, well, you just remind me of your father.
Pretty cool. So, yeah, I didn't watch the whole episode, in case you're wondering why they keep referring to spoilers. But I'm watching this on Hulu, and there are, like, advertisements all the time, and I just miscalculated. I thought, you know, I could just make it, just watch the show before we start recording, and then 45 minutes, but I forgot about all the hamburgers that they're trying to sell me, so good Lord. Well, anyway, let's go from Star Wars to Prince Charming and to Hook, and this is when we learn that Charming is actually, he's not going to make it to summer.
The arrow barely nicked me.
I'm sorry, mate.
You know how long?
Days. Weeks at most. You won't see summer. It's a really bad break. You might want to tell her.
No.
Well, you have to.
Maybe I don't.
Well, how's that?
Pixie dust.
You believe in this Tinkerbell's power and her pixie dust?
Indeed, I do.
And let's get her and that dust.
Isn't Hook a terrible oncologist? How many days? How much time do I have to live? Well, days. Well, or weeks. You know, no wonder that he tries, you know, alternative medicine like pixie dust. It is, it doesn't instill much confidence. But so we learn now that he is definitely going to die unless, well, apparently pixie dust can heal it.
I'm still holding out for a true love kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, I think it's going to be Henry. Henry deciding he can control magic. He can control Neverland and he's going to cure his grandfather.
Oh, that would be great. I mean, and because if he's a savior, he should.
That's right. And Pan tells him that this world runs on the imagination of our belief. Your world stopped believing in magic, so magic is dying. So right. You need to save it. But right. Here, everything's on imagination. So it's kind of, I still think it's that Matrix, you know. As soon as he realizes he's Neo and he can control and manipulate everything.
We're just having all kinds of references
so,
today.
Yeah, the end of season three is going to be Henry standing there like, whoa, I know Kung Fu. He's going to kick everyone. All right. How did we get here?
It's the Force. Use the Force, Henry.
I think we took the wrong pill at the beginning of this episode. Should have taken the red one. So, I'm a bit surprised that Charming is so confident that things will be okay. You know, no need to tell Snow White, and yeah, just use some pixie dust. It seems a bit easy. And how does he know that pixie dust is going to heal him?
Well, they've both avoided death how many times now? So it's kind of like, well, you know, been in this situation before.
He just believes in happy endings, and so
yeah, huh.
They always find each other.
That's true.
It's almost like the poison is not only affecting his health, but also his mind, because he's lying all the time in this episode.
Well, lying, it's more like not really telling the truth.
Yeah. That's lying, right?
Yeah, but it's not evil lying like what Regina does. It's more like, you know, I don't want to hurt Snow White. See, yeah. It's like a white lie, whereas Regina's lies are like pitch black with a bit of purple in it. But... Also,
he's confessing to Hook, and in the beginning of the season, two episodes ago, he was like, "Oh, Hook is evil. He's a pirate. Cannot trust him." And now he's confining with him.
Yeah, I'm starting to like Hook. He starts to become like one of their buddies. Especially now that Peter Pan is evil, I have no problems with Hook actually turning, you know, becoming more sympathetic. He might even save the day. Who knows? Let's go to the fairies, and this was quite like a visual explosion of colors all of a sudden. So a blue fairy and green Tinkerbell.
Good evening, Green.
Hey, Blue. You look amazing. Did you do something different?
You're late. You have already broken every rule in the book. Curfew, dust discipline. You got big for no reason.
Listen, I have news, amazing news. I was helping someone, a queen in the Enchanted Forest, Regina.
Do you know who she is? Her mother was Cora, the one who ripped out hearts. Her teacher is the Dark One.
So?
So consider yourself lucky you are still alive. Green, this is not a woman you can help. She is surrounded by darkness.
Sounds to me like she's exactly someone who could use help.
So, we are reintroduced to the delightful Kiwi accent of Rose McIver, who is the actress who plays Tinkerbell here, who also, some of you might recognize from very Kiwi movie, The Lovely Bones, directed by Peter Jackson. And Rose plays Susie Salmon's sister, Lindsay Salmon. And so she's back here, and I'm excited for my fellow, you know, Kiwi. No, I'm fellow. I'm not a Kiwi, but I wish I was.
I wish you were.
Right, exactly. But for my friends in New Zealand, that we finally have a Kiwi actress in Once Upon a Time. It's awesome. So, and we already had Australian in there, and now we have British, plenty of British, actually. So we're just waiting for the Irish and the Scottish. Do we have Irish already?
Robert Carlyle is Scottish.
Oh, that's
yeah, he is.
Oh, cool.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
If
Swedish.
I appreciate that he toned down his Scottish accent for Once Upon a Time.
Why?
Because I had posted, if you go to YouTube and look up, he did a whiskey commercial for Johnny Walker,
mm-hmm.
And you can barely understand him.
Is he from Glasgow?
But I think so.
But that's the whole idea, laddie. You have to drink a lot of whiskey to understand him.
There were subtitles to this commercial. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, well, that's because most people will watch it drunk.
Yeah.
He was probably doing the commercial in Glaswegian, which I understand is a whole different dialect.
Okay, well.
How did he get there?
May I remind you that this is a family series that we're talking about. Well, I had a question, not being very knowledgeable in this era, but the way that fairy headquarters are depicted with the flowers and like every fairy has her own colored flower to sit in. Deborah, is this Disney stuff? I vaguely remember that there were some animated movies or like CGI movies that were based on the character of Tinkerbell. Is this a reference to that?
Yeah, you know what? I totally had the same thought when she went up into that little flower. And I'm like, oh, we're going to meet all the other pixies that she's, you know. But there were, I think, two or three, like, direct-to-DVD, you know, Tinkerbell movies. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I've never watched them, which is a shame.
I think I have them all.
Oh, no. So...
My daughter is a big Tinkerbell fan.
So are these headquarters also in those animated movies?
They do live in flowers like that, but not exactly like that.
Okay, but they do live in flowers.
But
so
they
that,
do have
that
the
explains
flowers,
it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did they ever really fully explain the difference between fairy dust and pixie dust?
Yeah, it's nuclear.
Well, they said that pixie dust was stronger, but what's the difference between a pixie and a fairy?
But that was,
it's kind of a pixie is a novice and a fairy is a full-blown nun. I don't know.
So, in a monastery.
Yeah, because they are all nuns in our world.
It's true that Tinkerbell is still learning. I mean, she's still...
Yeah, but so was Nova, remember?
Well, okay, yeah. Can I bring up something that confused me? Okay, so why are the fairies in charge of the pixie dust?
Right.
Good point. And yeah,
who else should
why
be?
And Tinkerbell, why is her name Tinkerbell, but they call her green? I don't remember Nova being called pink.
Yeah.
Maybe she wasn't named Tinker. Well, no, she called herself Tinkerbell.
Yes, she says my name's not green; it's Tinkerbell.
So maybe she came from. There's another backstory. She came from somewhere else, and they put her with the fairies. She's an orphan.
Oh,
there we go.
She's not fairy.
She's going to turn into a swan.
She ended up. Maybe she ended up in Neverland because of that.
And we are going to have a whole lot more Tinkerbell backstory because we don't know why Pan trusts her. Yeah. I mean, we don't know what their relationship's about. So we have a whole lot more to get to with her. And I do like the fact that when they went into her where she lives and they said, you know, this is the home of somebody who's a loner and who just sleeps here. And Emma said, you know, it reminds me of my old place. And
just a place to sleep. That was great. I liked that.
And Mary
a lot.
Margaret said, I had a place like this once too. And Emma's like, what? No, you didn't. You always had castles and palaces and so I thought that was a nice moment between them, and you realize how many of these characters come from, I mean, I know that's what this whole show is about, like parental, and they're all orphans, and but they come from the same kind of place, that they've been loners, and it seems that this island is bringing it out in them.
I think Emma doesn't appreciate snow a lot, because she thinks, well, you always lived in a palace. You always had those canopy beds. And I was an orphan. I was always alone. But she does know the part of Snow's story that she had to run for Regina and lived in an oak tree. So maybe when... Also because they don't really talk to each other. But in the first episodes, that's also what Pan points out. And you have a grudge against your parents because they abandoned you. So you see a kind of, they walked amongst each other, so they are in the same group, but you don't see a lot of talk, getting to know each other better, talking.
Yeah. But it is, this island is interesting, and I think it's going to change their personalities, but bring out certain things about each of their personalities.
Well, it should. We talked briefly about the Heart of Darkness and how you deal psychologically with going into the unknown and delving into that darkness and really, you know, unpacking your own internal trunk, so to speak. When you were talking just there about having that just a place to sleep, it's not really a home. Everybody's looking for community. Everybody's looking to be loved and to be with other people. And at times in their lives, they make wrong choices, or they take a different path, or they find themselves alone, and maybe they don't always know how to get back to that community that they're searching for.
Well, that seems to be the big problem with Regina. She seems to be unable to love, or unwilling to love, or let love enter her life. That is probably also why they let her whine all the time. Like, just let me use magic, you know, just get this over with. Which feels a bit like season one Regina. We've seen her grow beyond that. But apparently for this whole idea of, well, she has to go back to her inner self and discover what her true problem is. It's kind of necessary to make her do that. But
and that's how she was raised, remember? Her mother dealt with everything with magic and didn't know how to love her. And I know the father had love for her and she had love for her father, but that maternal relationship was not there. Mm-hmm. And that's just as important as a paternal relationship.
Speaking of paternal relationships, we have this conversation between Robin Hood and, the whole idea of letting his son, Roland, figure as bait to lure the shadow of Peter Pan to the place. And then you've got, on the other side, Bill, and he's like, well, I've got a son too that I miss. And so it's two fathers, actually, that are discussing, you know, how the whole bond with their child.
It felt a little bit, that conversation to me felt a little bit like emotional blackmail, because Bill is like, yeah, I have a son too, and then from my wife and almost couldn't have our son because she was so sick, and then Bill reminds him kindly of who made her better, so who is responsible for the fact mm-hmm. that he has a son, which is his father, and that's kind of, did you really have to rub it in like that?
Yeah, but then they say, okay, you can do it one time. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, I would never let my young son do that.
just once.
There's no second chance. And Bay says, well, this is my second chance. We didn't really talk about second chances, but it's mm-hmm. everywhere. I mean, please, if you're listening to this, tell me you caught the reference to second chance everywhere.
Yes.
Everybody got a second chance.
And again, here is the same theme that we saw in the William Tell reference, where William Tell has to more or less put the life of his child in jeopardy. He's forced to do so. And here we have the same, it's a parallel theme. Yeah, it seems like the children are all in danger right here. So, Regina, let's go back to Regina and Tinkerbell. They have a complicated history. Tinkerbell is no angel. We learn a little bit more about this relationship between the two.
I'm holding your heart in my hand, and I'm not hearing one reason not to squeeze it into ash.
All right, you want a reason? Here you go. You think I was afraid?
You think I did the wrong thing? Well, fairy, right now you're making the same choice.
I picked revenge over hope. And you're holding the result.
If you make the same choice I did, then what you're looking at is your own future. I'm not going to tell you what to do. The choice is yours. Kill me or act like the fairy you are.
You said I was a terrible fairy.
Well, then prove me wrong. Pick hope over anger. Choose love and help me get my son back.
This is quite nice. It's mm-hmm. It's again, it's another parallel in this episode. We talked about Peter Pan almost luring Henry You know, just kill me. he's trying to get Henry to act aggressively or to attack or show his teeth. And in this case, it's Regina who is challenging Tinkerbell to show mercy, to choose hope instead of revenge. Before all this happens, of course, there is this scene where Tinkerbell's, I know how to make you happy. Just follow me and I'll show you your future husband. And it's the guy in all covered in green dust, and he's sitting there. And he has a lion tattoo. And just walk in and, you know, have a drink together and all will be fine, which Regina does not do. It was pretty cool. There's a little subtle thing here that is done, which is brilliant. As much as I don't like the CGI, I do love the music in this series. And if you want to go back, just rewind to this moment where Tinkerbell shows this future lover of Regina. And at that moment, the music does tum, tum, ta-dum. Oh. It is brilliant. I was like, oh, gosh, that is so awesome. Nobody notices this, but it is so subtle. I love that. So it's a little, there comes the bride. But unfortunately, it's not to be because Regina runs away, which is a little, I was like, okay, why? Why is she so scared and why would she lie about it?
Because anger is everything she has. That's what. So Tinkerbell says, well, to let go of the anger. And then she gets reminded of what Rumpel says to her, that anger is all what she has. And she runs away.
Well, I float away. It's what weights her down. It's her strength right now.
I agree with that. And I also think there's a little bit of fear of success. Like, it's the same kind of thing where you hear people who get most of the way through college and have, like, one more term left to go in college, and then they just drop out, you know, and, like, don't finish it because they're just afraid of success. Hmm. And maybe that's it. You know, different expectations when you're successful. And it sounds kind of like a hokey excuse, but there's a lot of people who are afraid that, oh, if I go down this road, I'm going to have to do something different. I'm going to have to behave differently. And that ties in with anger. That ties in with letting go of the anger.
Well, and Regina also tells her that she didn't go in. And Tink says, well, what are you afraid of? And she goes, what you need is love. And Regina tells her, well, I had love. He's dead and I suffered. So she's afraid of suffering again, because opening your heart to love is putting your own self at great risk. I mean, you're really exposing yourself. You're giving your whole self to another person, and you don't know how that person's going to respond or react or be back with you. So,
yeah, and plus she's married to the king. She's right now married to the king, so she runs off with this other guy, madly in love with him. And what will happen next? Would the history repeat itself? Because I can imagine the king going after her.
That is a little sticky point, isn't it?
Yep.
So, but then did you catch, and Father, you wouldn't have caught this yet, but the music when she was having that in exchange with Tinkerbell, we got that Regina Evil Queen theme going on. The dun, 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 dun.
Cool.
They brought that back in there.
Yeah, that's what I said. They do play with the music quite a bit. And I love it. So then they, Tinkerbell now has no more wings. Her flying license has been revoked by the Blue Fairy, which I really start to dislike the Blue Fairy. It's like, come on, cut her some slack.
Well, yeah, and when Tink says to her, everyone deserves a second chance, and the Blue Fairy tells her that was your second chance.
Yeah.
And she says, well, give me another chance. She says, I can't. On the simple, tragic reason that I no longer believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was real powerful, too, because later it's Snow who tells her, you have a home with us. Well, why would you want me? Because I believe in you. And yeah. If we go back to the Disney version or even the J.M. Barrie version, fairies exist because we believe in them. And don't you remember as a child watching Peter Pan and Lisa, maybe your kids did this, and you clap the hands. You have to believe. Did you not do that?
We do that recently.
No. I do it every evening.
Just watched it, so yeah.
I was about to say, you said your kids just watched it.
They did. Yeah, but they didn't start clapping. But yeah, I wondered that watching this episode, though, if you know, Mary Margaret says she believes in her, and it kind of makes me wonder if, again, it's a powerful island, as they all start to believe in themselves and magic, if Tinkerbell, you know, will that change? You know, will Tinkerbell change back? You know, things like that. Will it evolve? And I'm really hopeful. I mean, that I would think that's why they keep bringing it up.
It should. I mean, every time. I mean, with Henry needs to believe, and Emma needs to believe, and my gosh, if we get Neil in there, if everybody starts to believe, I mean, I think even Rumple knows he can't win. He's going to be defeated because he doesn't truly believe. And like I said earlier, Pan tells Henry, this place runs on imagination. Your world stopped believing. Therefore, magic is dying. And so when they say Tinkerbell, well, she doesn't have any magic. And Charming, that look goes over his face. No pixie dust. And she's like, people stop believing in me.
But we know Pan had pixie dust. So where'd
maybe
he get it?
A little bit of it in that.
And where'd he get it? Because when Tinkerbell got there, allegedly, she didn't have any unless she stole some more.
Yes, she must have.
But we don't know because that's the backstory. We don't know how she got to Neverland, and we don't know whether she did or didn't bring pixie dust with it. So.
Maybe she had a secret stash.
Okay, but I want to know how many of you were holding your breath when the shadow came.
I was worried it was going to creep my kids out a little bit. It was creepy. I mean,
it was nerve wracking. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, but the interesting thing was, what was the code word to summon the shadow? I believe. Again.
I believe. Mm-hmm. I know.
And I was like, okay, that's the code word. I was like, Peter Pan or something with Neverland would have been the code word. But apparently, if you stand for a window and you say, I believe, then Peter Pan comes. That's interesting.
No, it's just a shadow, a demonic shadow. And then that he pulls the baby and pulls him out of Robin's arms, and Milan jumps up. And Neil leaps. He's that flying leap of faith. I mean, that's all I could think of is that lion's leap. Boom, he leaps out and grabs the shadow by the ankle and they fly off.
So yeah, now that Neil's
just like
the
first time. Just like the first time. Mm-hmm.
That was pretty smart of him. He couldn't find a portal and he thought to bring the I mean, you know, I thought that was a pretty smart way to get to Neverland.
Mm-hmm. I just, when it was all over, I sat there and my daughters and I looked just like, I was holding my breath.
Imagine last season it took episodes and episodes for the Cora and Emma and Snow to find a portal and Bale comes up with it in 10 minutes or so.
Oh, yeah, of course he's done it before.
That's, and I'm not going into spoiler territory, but I really am looking forward to Rumple, Bale, Emma, Henry, all of them, those four particularly, being on this island with Pan and seeing how, you know, where they go.
Yes. Yeah, I'm excited that they bring Bale back to the original group, because I feel that he belongs there. He should not be in the other world.
This is a tiny, it's not a spoiler, but it's on the trailer that you're going to play at the end of this episode.
Okay.
If you look at the trailer very closely, Bale is not with Emma.
Oh, okay.
He has not been reunited in the trailer. He's talking to Pan. He's talking to Felix. He's talking to his father.
Cool.
But he's not with the group.
Well, it's kind of interesting that they're separated and they have to find each other. That's good.
I'm glad that they didn't keep us waiting for, you know, what was it last year with Mary Margaret and Emma were trapped in Enchanted Forest for like half a season? You know, looking for a way home. I was really glad they didn't do that with Neil. I mean, he figured it out pretty quickly. Let's get on with the story.
I was a bit surprised that they didn't do this whole, you know, we can communicate through dreams, which they kind of teased. And was it in the first episode? And it never materialized. Like,
I think they were just trying to give Aurora a storyline.
Perhaps. Yeah, which is kind of over now,
how they
right?
continue to visit the Enchanted World might be if Snow and Aurora communicate again. I don't know.
Is there any reason for us to continue watching the storyline of Aurora and Philip and Mulan? Or because it seems that it's redundant now. They got a scene,
Mulan is now with a merry man. So, and we also, and at the very end of the last scene, is that the man with the lion's tattoo is Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the particular, the love interest for Regina could be Robin Hood. So that tells me that somehow the whole band ends up in the Enchanted Forest at one point.
Oh, that's
because
possible.
Otherwise they wouldn't tease it as like that.
Yeah.
Right. So at one point they have to leave Neverland. And and I'm kind of interested in now if Regina will try to find her true love,
or the other way around. Perhaps they return to where Mulan and Sleeping Beauty are, and that's when they find each other. I don't know. Yeah, but there definitely has to be at least a confrontation between Regina and Robin Hood, because otherwise. Why would they set it up here? So, let's move over to the last part of this episode. So, again, I have not seen the end of this. I did watch a short clip of Mulan talking to... what's her name? The Sleeping Beauty?
Aurora.
And it seemed to be that there was some kind of romantic interest of Mulan for Aurora, and then Aurora is announcing, "Well, you know, Philip and I were expecting a baby," and Mulan is all like devastated. And again, I was a bit puzzled by that part of the story. I was like, "Okay, so where is this going to go?" It felt a little bit tacked on, like not really part
too.
Of this episode. I failed to see why, other than perhaps, you know, doing something a bit trendy. But I was like, okay, well, what is the function of these scenes with regards to what's happening in Neverland? Unless they're again like setting up stuff.
It frees up Mulan to go to the Merry Men.
Hmm.
But
Mulan is now joining the
The band of Robin
Hood.
The band of Robin Hood. Yeah.
So you need to devise something because it was always a trio: Philip, Aurora, and Mulan. So we have to come up with something to send off Mulan to something else.
Right. Right. Didn't Mulan also have a thing for Philip or?
Yeah,
well,
a lot of people were puzzled by that. But the thing was, when I was watching it, it was like, so let me get this straight. So you are Mulan. You're kind of in love with Aurora. That's the who helped to get Philip back from the Netherworld. So they will be together again. If you really want this girl, then you don't do that.
Or right? Is she sad because she's sad that Aurora and Philip get something together, and she was in love with Philip. I don't know. It was a bit
unclear.
The
whole last season, she was in love with Philip.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yes.
And
she was with Philip for the 28 years while they were searching for Aurora.
So wouldn't it make sense that
and she rescued him from being the tiny dragon?
Maybe she likes everyone.
Yeah. I don't know.
She's confused.
Anyway,
I like this.
It is confusing to me.
Trendy.
But
yeah, I think they're trying to appease certain segments of the. Of the audience.
Could be. I mean, it was kind of like not really too important to this story. But anyway, did we see how Philip was rescued from the wraith?
No.
Are they just going to skip over that?
Apparently.
I'm not going to miss it.
No, I know. But it feels like something. Come on. Loose ends. Don't do that. You already give us a bad CGI. Don't give us loose ends.
Put us all in Neverland. We've got all the main ensemble in Neverland. That's where we should be focused.
That's
where we need to go.
Look here. Don't look there.
Neil, who has been there, knows everybody, knows everything. Hook, who has been there, knows everybody, knows everything. And Rumpelstiltskin, who has been there, knows everybody, and actually has very little hope.
Yes. One would think that there are ample elements here for future developments. Before we talk about those future developments, here's one last sound clip that I want to play. It's a Tinkerbell. And I have no idea what this refers to because I've not seen the end of the episode. You guys comment.
Did you ever go back and find him? The man with the lion tattoo?
No.
Unreal. Do you know how selfish that is?
It's a lot of things. But how is it selfish? Because you didn't just ruin your life. You ruined his.
Okay. Is this still about, you know, the confrontation with the heart, et cetera, or is this later?
This is the lion tattoo. This is the very last scene in the in the episode.
Hmm. Yeah, so...
And that's when they reveal to us that the lion tattoo is Robin Hood.
Okay. Cool.
I thought that was a very good way to say it, that you... I mean, selfish, and Regina's thinking, what? And, you know, I thought that was a really nice way to say it, that you've ruined his life. And that tells me we're going to go back and they're going to get together.
Yeah, that also made me think that we that it cannot be the end of that kind of worms that they owned.
I'm still hung up on the whole, what if she had? And she's married to the king and she'd gone in there and met Robin Hood.
Yeah, exactly.
They would have run off together and Roland wouldn't have been born and Snow would have never been, and there would have never been any curse. And
Details.
Well, but you know, perhaps he was not yet... You know, going to be
ready.
So this might be, this might be something for the future. I mean, the pixie dust doesn't lie, according to Tinkerbell. So it might still be that they will get together. It's just something for the future, and
that's right.
It wasn't meant to be. That's
so maybe the Tinkerbell's timing was just off. So
it wasn't even Tinkerbell. It was just the pixie dust.
Well, it's just like Rumple. He can see the future, but he can't see it exactly.
Right.
She knows their true love, but maybe it's not their time yet.
I mean, in a way, Robin Hood, now being a widow, you know, could start a new relationship. Why not? I mean, you know what? This could be a way to resolve the triangle Regina, Emma, Henry. Because what would happen if little Roland gets into trouble and Robin Hood realizes that Robin needs a mom and Regina happens to be available because Henry already has a mom?
No, that's a marriage of convenience. That no.
No, but it could bring them together.
Yeah. I mean, it could give Regina a new son in a way, adopted, but so was Henry.
I'm going to predict we don't see that until the end of this season, second half of the season.
After we deal with Henry and Pan.
We got to deal with Pan first.
Yeah, but I think that tension between, and it was here in this episode again, between Emma and Regina. And it was, actually, I like that scene too, where they have this little, you know, whatever, just go save Henry, etc. Love that. So there seems to be a growing understanding, kind of like a, more of a balance between Emma and Regina, and so I don't know. I'm thinking this might actually be a way out for them to make sure that that is resolved somehow. You can't have two moms for poor Henry. He's going to be schizophrenic, or he's going to turn evil.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of families out there that have two moms, and they learn to get along, or they learn to communicate and share responsibility without stepping on each other's toes. And I really do think that beyond the whole you're the evil queen and this is my mom the savior, that they've got to address those issues and resolve it in a positive way.
Let's hope they do. We're going to move over to the promo at the end of the episode again for those of you that want to be completely fresh to watch the next episode. You may now leave in peace. Thank you for listening. You can find future and past episodes of this podcast on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, which is our blog. That's also where we welcome your reactions. If you have a moment, we would really appreciate a review on iTunes, as long as you don't burn us to the ground. We're really sensitive. But we're doing our best, and I know I have to apologize today. I'm just... It's been a crazy day, and I was not very prepared for this episode. The blame is all on me. Just please don't blame the ladies. They're wonderful. So let's play the promo, and then we'll just briefly talk about what we just heard.
It's a map. To where?
Home.
ABC next Sunday. Their moment of truth has arrived.
Let's put this rescue mission into action.
But when the enemy is this powerful...
You can only beat him if you're willing to die. I am.
Survival means facing...
If you die, I would not be able to move on.
...their greatest fears.
There is no escaping Neverland.
Once upon a time, all new next Sunday at 8, 7 central on ABC. Will Bay find his son on Neverland?
Okay, I just need one prediction from all of you about the next episode. Where is this going, Inge?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think that is kind of... It almost looks like people are fighting. I want to die for Henry. No, me. Take me. Pick me. You know, like the donkey in Shrek. That's maybe completely crazy.
You mean that Disney parody that we are not supposed to talk about?
Yeah, no talking about Shrek. No Shrek.
That's my favorite movie.
Oh, dear. Deborah, what are your predictions?
I don't have any. I'm at a loss. I seriously don't see what's going to happen. I have no good guesses.
All right, let me ask the two sisters then. Lisa, Shelley, any ideas?
I think that we're going to see Neil really step up and try to be the hero here. But I think in the end, it's going to come down to Henry having to save himself.
Okay. And Shelley?
I agree with Lisa. I think what I'm looking forward to the most on Sunday is going to be the reuniting of Bay with his father and their discussion of, and I hope there's a discussion, I'll be disappointed if they don't, of what each experienced in Neverland previously and how they're going to beat Pan to save Henry, because Neil definitely is, this is his second chance. He's got to go and express his love to Emma and get his son back.
Do you think Pan is going to turn to the light side? Is he going to convert to become good again?
No.
I'm uninterested at it at this point. I have no investment in that at the moment. I just want to see. And Pan saying in that clip, there's no escape from Neverland. Hello. Rumpel has left. Hook has left. And Neil has left. So you're being confronted by three people who have escaped Neverland. Unless he meant it metaphorically, it always stays with you somehow.
Who knows? He's a peculiar little fellow, that Peter Pan. But I'm definitely looking forward to understanding why he is this evil. Where does that come from? There has to be some hurt in his life. That's all for future episodes of this podcast. Thank you for listening. Again, you are listening to Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and we will be back next week with another analysis of episode 4 of season 3. Thanks for listening, and talk to you soon.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.